An Alaskan environmental group loses an appeal on a Canadian mine, and the Santa Train returns to Skagway this weekend. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Barrett Wilbur. Those stories and more up next. An Alaskan environmental group has lost its appeal of a large Canadian mine planned for just across the border. The developer says the decision shows it's behaving responsibly. But the conservation group says project owners and Canada's government didn't follow their own rules. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has details.
About a year ago, the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council tried a new tool to protest plans for the Kerr Sulphurets Mitchell Transboundary Mine Project. It appealed to a Canadian agency called the National Contact Point. CX Guy Archibald says it's supposed to address international business disputes.
We're exploring every venue we can to try to protect the transboundary rivers and the communities and fisheries they support from the large-scale development of Canadian mines across the border.
It tried to convince Canadian authorities that project owners didn't follow guidelines requiring stakeholder engagement and environmental protections. But last month, the agency rejected that appeal.
There is no formal requirement for us to engage in Alaska.
Rudy Franck is chairman and CEO of Seabridge Gold. The Toronto-headquartered corporation owns the KSM and another British Columbia mine exploration project.
The confirmation from the National Contact Point in Canada just clearly reinforces the process we went through during the environmental assessment process, that the engagement we had not only with the Canadian authorities, but also with the Alaskan authorities was appropriate and bountiful.
SEAC acknowledges meetings took place involving conservation, tribal, fisheries, and other Southeast Alaska groups. But Archibald says the Canadian government failed to look into what happened at those meetings.
They did not consider at all whether that communication between Seabridge Gold and SEAC was adversarial at all or particularly informative at all. Just that Seabridge had attended some meetings, presented their PowerPoint, and that was adequate.
Seabridge Gold says it's listened to concerns and made changes in its plans. For example, it moved its tailings storage site at the request of British Columbia tribal leaders, and Franck says it added protections to its design for that site, where waste rock is kept after being processed.
There is no requirement, or there was no requirement in British Columbia to actually line the tailings facility, but we agreed that we would line a portion of the tailings facility to deal with material that went through the mill that would actually touch cyanide.
The company continues drilling at its KSM site to locate more valuable concentrations of gold, copper, and other metals, but its biggest challenge is to find investors or partners to turn the exploration project into a mine. Franck says the corporation has turned down several offers because they were not the right match. He says non-disclosure agreements prevent him from identifying those companies. SEAC, meanwhile, continues to push for high-level talks between U.S. and Canada's federal governments. It, other organizations, the Walker-Mulott administration, and Alaska's congressional delegation want stronger protections for Alaska fisheries. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
Northern Lynn Canal has a reputation for being colder and snowier than the rest of Southeast. But after a snowy November, residents are trading in ski boots for extra tufts. November offered enough snow for winter activities to take off in Northern Southeast. Snowshoes were tested, ski boots were tied, and ice skates were sharpened. But melting snow and warm winds are giving Upper Lynn Canal an unexpected taste of spring this week.
It's definitely a lot warmer than what we usually see for this time of year. We did have yesterday a lot of record highs set across the Northern Panhandle.
That's Edward Liske, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. He says it's normal for Southeast Alaska to flip-flop between cold conditions and warm, wet weather. But right now, a long-term weather event has the dial stuck on warm.
The main weather pattern right now is we got a rather strong ridge of high pressure over the western United States that's just blocking a whole lot of storms and just directing them up toward us. And it's also directing a lot of subtly warm flow into our area.
He says that pressure ridge has been hanging there for about a year.
The warmer temperatures that are happening over the that particular area is reinforcing the ridge over that area. They're also rather dry down there. They've had a lot of wildfires.
And while California battles wildfires, Southeast?
It's getting dumped on, basically, by a whole bunch of rain.
Liske says there's no way to know when the high pressure ridge will dissipate. His one-month forecast says December will likely stay warm. For skiers, sledders, or anyone who likes to stay dry while leaving the house,
maybe some hope toward January.
And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilper.
And I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow.
The Santa Train is coming to town in Skagway this weekend. The annual event draws hundreds of visitors each year. With mild temperatures, organizers are anticipating a good turnout. KHNS's Abby Collins.
This time last year, it was particularly cold in Skagway.
I think that last year, the really, truly frigid temperatures detracted people from coming out and participating in the event.
That's Jacqueline Taylor-Rose. She's the manager of marketing and product development at White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad.
But this year, looking like we're going to be in the 40s, it's amazing to think of all the extra people that will be coming out to partake in the Santa Train this year.
Despite chilly temperatures, Taylor-Rose says White Pass still had over 660 people turn out to meet with Santa and ride the train. In recent years, the company has added extra train cars to accommodate more passengers. The train makes an 8.5-mile trip up the track to Clifton before returning to Skagway.
We just pulled the lineup for what we're going to take on Saturday. We have 16 cars, and we'll be ready to go and hopefully get as many people on as we can.
The event starts Saturday morning at the White Pass Train Depot.
When Santa Claus comes in on the train, he'll come in at 11 and meet with all the kids from out of town and anyone that he missed from Skagway the night before, and we'll get everyone through the line to see Santa and then onto the train, and away we go.
Friday evening also offers an opportunity to see Santa at the depot from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m.
We are just excited to welcome everyone to this annual event. It's been a pretty special way to kick off Yuletide for not only Skagway, but the surrounding communities, and we're excited to see everyone out and about this weekend.
Taylor-Rose says she's looking forward to this year's iteration of the event.
We are just excited to welcome everyone to this annual event. It's been a pretty special way to kick off Yuletide for not only Skagway, but the surrounding communities, and we're excited to see everyone out and about this weekend.
The train departs Skagway around 11:45 a.m. on Saturday. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
The demand for Alaska sockeye has shifted away from some of the traditional Asian markets. McDowell Group seafood economist Andy Wink says in the early 2000s, most Bristol-based sockeye was fated to either be canned or shipped frozen to Japan. He says that's a much smaller part of the market now, about a third of the volume of Alaska sockeye.
It's been an amazing transformation. And, you know, that's not something that just happens by itself. That took a lot of investment, a lot of foresight and planning, and, you know, a lot of really good work over those 15 years to develop new markets in the U.S. and in Europe.
According to the McDowell Group's 2017 Fall Sockeye Market Analysis, in 2016, only 34% of Alaska sockeye production went to Japanese or canned markets. The seafood industry struggled across the board in the early 2000s. Wink says the state and federal government eventually solved many of those issues with grants, infrastructure, and marketing.
I mean, we had that downturn in pricing in 2015 and 2016, but we've, you know, recovered a lot faster, and there's several reasons for that, but one of them is that we're much more diversified in terms of our markets and our products, and that just means that when one market isn't as strong, we've got other places to put fish, and that's super important.
The analysis goes over some other elements that affected the American market's increasing demand for sockeye salmon. That includes higher fish quality resulting from sockeye fishermen chilling their harvest and consumers' growing awareness of the benefits of wild sockeye over farmed salmon. For KHNS News, I'm Barrett Wilbur. Thanks for joining us this evening.